time for Hanson McLean Advisors Money Matters, hosted by Scott Hanson and Pat McLean, credentialed financial advisors serving you since 1993.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us this weekend.
That's right. Glad you're here with us, both myself and my co-host here. We are both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays meeting with people like yourself, helping them plan their financial futures, and we come here on the weekends to be your financial advisor on the air. And glad you are here.
I was asked a couple times this last week, do you like doing the radio show? And so I thought about it, and I said, actually, I love doing the radio show. I just don't like going to the radio show on the weekends. But once I'm here, I absolutely love it.
I agree 100%.
I could do it all day. I really do enjoy it. I like the interaction. It keeps you sharp. It makes me keep up to date. I do anyway.
No, actually, I told someone, I said, one of the benefits, this is a friend, someone having this conversation about this, because we've been doing the radio program almost 20 years. And just like you, I said, I can't let a week go by without immersing myself in the financial news. I need to keep on top of things because you never know what you're going to get on the radio, what kind of questions are going to come at you, and you don't want to sound like an idiot when you...
Yeah. You know, well, for me, I don't want to sound like more of an idiot.
Well, okay, then we got that. So, but...
yeah, so, but I do. We love doing it. It's great fun. It's hard to go on a Saturday. You know, and the only upside is...
It has been a weekend program. We were Sundays for many, many years. It's been a weekend program for a lot.
Yeah.
And of course, we're here every week to both talk about what's happening in the financial world and how that might impact you and the areas that maybe you should pay attention to, and also to take your calls, answer your questions, and offer second opinions and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And if you want to be part of the program, the contact number to reach us is 916 area code 921-1530. Again, you want to reach us, got a question for us, 916-921-1530. Toll-free is 1-800-834-1530, or send us an email at questions@moneymatters.com, questions@moneymatters.com. And actually, we thought we'd start this week with a emailed question.
All right, let's do that.
Let's do that. That sounds so exciting.
Hey. We didn't,
huh?
We don't do the email questions every week, but we do them quite often.
Yeah. So Roger, here's what Roger asked. Basically, Roger is going to retire in 7 years. He's got 31 years with the same employer, has saved about $300,000 in his 401k, which is good, puts in 10% a year in pre-tax. They just offered a Roth contribution option for the 401k, and he switched from the pre-tax to the Roth, and wants to know if he's doing the right thing. 53 years old. All his retirement savings is in the company 401k.
We don't know whether he has a pension or not.
Yeah, it says right here. I will be eligible to retire at age 60 with a defined pension.
Hmm. All
right. Right there in the...
All right.
Huh?
So,
we are... It's not easy.
You plan on continuing to live in the state of California... When you retire,
then I think this makes a lot of sense.
It would make a lot of sense to actually make the contributions to a Roth. And the reason for that is you want a diversified tax strategy, much like you want a diversified portfolio. And the use of a Roth, because the withdrawals come out tax-free, you actually, there's some benefit there. Plus, you have more net spendable income in retirement.
Now, the vast majority of Americans are in a 15% federal tax bracket or less. That's the majority of Americans. Matter of fact, almost half don't pay federal income taxes, the way the transfers are set up these days. But yet, the vast majority of contributions in 401k plans are pre-tax, which tells me right off the bat, at least for about two-thirds of people, they'd be better off in a Roth. If you're in a low tax bracket, I would clearly make the bet that pay the tax today. So it's tax-free at retirement. So one of the benefits of getting retirement and having some money in a Roth, for example, Roger's got $300,000 in his 401k. when he's retired, that'll be retirement income, but it's all going to be taxable to him.
So, Scott, I...
If you hit retirement with $300,000 in a Roth 401k, it's going to be tax-free.
Now, he goes on to say that he actually lives in Nevada. Did you see that line?
I didn't read that one.
The bottom line.
It's a long email.
It is actually a long email, but he lives in Nevada. So, actually, the answer still is yes, the Roth makes sense. As long as you plan on living in Nevada when you retire. Because what you don't want to do is to pay California taxes and then move to a state with a lower income tax rate and then pull these out tax-free.
Exactly right.
So as long as he's in Nevada to begin with.
If you live in a state with no income taxes, then I'd definitely use the Roth.
Yeah. If you live in a state with high income taxes and plan on moving to a state with low income taxes, then the Roth does not make sense. If you live, let me repeat that again. If you live in a state with high income taxes relative to the income taxes in other states, and you move to a lower income tax state, Roth contributions do not make sense while you are employed. If you plan on living in the same state with the same tax rate, good.
And so I personally have, I contributed to a Roth 401k for when it first came out for a few years and switched back to Roth.
Well, and part of the reason was is that taxes had gone up in the state of California
and keep going up
and again and again and again and again. And then his other question was for Roger was his portfolio looks a little, according to another financial advisory firm, his portfolio looks a little bit too aggressive. Roger, it's probably a little bit too aggressive in company stock, but the rest of it seems okay to me.
Pat, you're hilarious.
Why?
Because the rest of the listeners, they have no idea. And this one, all right, page three. No, here we go. Yep, that's a good one, too. I think you're fine there. Next one. I think this I would reduce.
Stop. All right, I'll go through the question. He has 20% in company stock.
You got to admit, that is kind of funny.
I didn't know how far we should get into this thing. It's only an hour program. 20% in company stock, 30% in index 500, which is the S&P 500, 20% in balance, 20% in target, 2025, and 10% in bond. So fortunately, this all adds up to 100%.
That's always a helpful thing.
So if you look at this
I got to admit real quick. I remember one time, this was years ago, and I had someone asked me how to allocate their 401k. I did some research on it, sent it back to them, and they said, I appreciate this, but this only adds up to 90%.
Is that right?
Whoops.
So 20% in company stock, 30% in index 500, 20% in balance, 20% in target, 10% in bonds. Another advisor said that it's too aggressive.
Too much in company stock, which I would agree, 20% in company stock.
Yeah, and the rest of it is actually, it's about 60% stock and 40% bonds and cash. Which, due to the fact that you have a defined benefit pension plan.
Can I get a pension?
And that you're probably not going to take large withdrawals on this.
It's about 60% in stocks.
Yeah, it's about right. It wouldn't bother me. You're 7 years away from retirement.
But the company stock, so it's interesting. You could look at, some people say never have more than 4% in any one stock or 8%. There's different kind of numbers. And I don't really go by those percentages much. It kind of depends. Because you might have half your money in a company stock if you could afford to live on the other half. In other words, if you have enough money set aside, enough money saved, and you want to be more aggressively weighted towards one company and you could afford to do so. I mean, if you worked for Apple Corporation, for example, let's say you've got a couple million bucks in your 401k now because the stock's done so well. And you say, well, I'm going to always keep at least 50% in Apple.
I'd be okay with that. You wouldn't keep 100% in Apple.
Of course not.
No.
But once you're past the point of what you're meeting, of what your needs are going
to
be,
then it's okay to be a little bit more aggressive. And that's why it's okay to be 60% stock and 40% bonds in Roger's portfolio because of the fact that he's got a defined benefit pension plan coming to him in retirement, and we assume Social Security. And he lives in a low income tax state, the state of Nevada.
Of course, you have to live in Nevada.
Okay. I like parts of Nevada.
There's a very small part of Nevada.
There is, actually. There is.
A lot of that place.
I do like the Carson Valley, though. I'm not going to... I do like the Carson Valley. It is a little hot.
Isn't all windswept and all that?
Yeah, but I like that kind of look. I like. In fact, I was looking.
Look, I'm not talking about look. I'm talking about you going outside your house and getting windswept. So there's sandstorms.
There's a bicycle ride called Ride Across Nevada, and I was actually looking at
eight people do it.
It actually that one of the things is it's called.
I remember driving across Highway 50.
Didn't you get a ticket driving across?
I got pulled over, but he let me go.
Why?
I don't. Should I be admitted?
Yeah, go ahead, tell him.
I was doing a mountain bike trip in Moab, Utah, driving back. There's four guys, four bikes in the car, and I...
You were speeding significantly.
Yes, thank you. And I really... Anyway, I got... there's nothing in either direction. All of a sudden, I see a parked car on the side of the highway. There's no cars in miles. I can't see one anyway. I thought, I wonder if that's a highway patrolman, maybe. So I slow down as I passed him, and he pulled me over, and... He says, you know why I pulled you over? I said, why is that? He says, well, I clocked you at going 93 miles an hour.
Which is speeding.
I said, is that right? He says, yeah, how fast do you think you're going? I said, 93 miles an hour.
What'd he say?
He almost smiled. He appreciated the honesty. He says, well, the speed limit's 70 or 75 or whatever it is. So he says, you got to slow it down. And he let me go.
Does anyone ever go along with the...
We got to take a break.
All right. That was nice.
I don't know why I admitted that I shouldn't be driving that fast. It was wrong of me.
Yeah.
921-1530 is the number.
Stay tuned for more confessions by Scott.
921-1530. This is Hanson McLean.
Scott Hanson and Pat McLean, hosts of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, started their investment advisory firm, Hanson McLean Advisors, some 20 years ago with the idea of providing honest, transparent financial advice. From humble beginning with a small staff, today, Hanson McLean is one of the largest independent advisory firms in the country with a team of advisors in offices in Sacramento, Roseville, and Folsom. The same type of straightforward financial advice that is provided during the show is what the clients of Hanson McLean Advisors receive on a regular basis. The approach of Hanson McLean is first to listen to you and then come up with a plan to provide a greater chance of success in achieving your financial goals. Hanson McLean Advisors is not simply a store that sells one type of product. No, Hanson McLean Advisors is an independent advisory firm that pick from a wide variety of financial products to best suit your needs. So if you have yet to see how the commission-free programs of Hanson McLean Advisors can benefit you, contact them today at 1-888-2-HANSON or visit them at HansonMcLean.com. That's HansonMcLean.com.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, glad you're with us. We need to take some calls here. 921-1530 is the number to join the program.
1-800-834-1530, or you can email us a question at questions@moneymatters.com.
And let's talk to John. John, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hey, good afternoon.
Hi. How are you, John?
Thanks for waiting, John.
Appreciate that.
That's great. Well, I have a situation where we own a home in another city, like Grand Prairie, and currently it's valued at about $250 to $260 market value. And our current interest rate for that house was 5.45 under a 30-year fixed rate of FHA.
Okay.
We've only owned the house since October of 2008. And our current principal that we still owe on the house is approximately $162K.
Okay, and you said the house is worth about $250?
Correct.
Okay.
Our current mortgage payment is right at about $1,755 per month.
Okay.
That's with the escrow figured in.
Mm-hmm.
And what I would like to do, my goal is to keep the house for approximately 7 to 10 more years, but with a lower payment through lower interest by refinancing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, along with that, we would also like to take out maybe $30K for a new car that we would like to purchase. So far, the only offer we got was a 4.0 APR for a fixed 30-year loan with 0 points, and that's figured in with approximately $3,000-plus in closing costs.
So, John, let me ask a couple questions. This is a second home for you, is that correct?
It will be, yes. Once one of the reasons why we wanted to lower the payment is so that we can afford a primary home, which we will be in another city.
Who lives in this house now?
Currently, no one.
Has anyone lived in this house?
No, we go there pretty much every other weekend.
Got it. It's a vacation home.
So this is a vacation home.
And down the road, is it going to be your primary residence?
It will be when I retire.
Okay.
Yeah.
And do you own a home now that you live in full time?
Not yet. We're staying with friends and families.
Got it.
And so are you planning on buying something here locally and then selling it 10 years?
Yes, we are. We're planning to get a much smaller house, some that would be affordable within my budget. So for right now, my current annual income is approximately $75,000. We had another $35,000 to it, but my wife just recently lost her job.
I don't think you could afford another home. I think that either you need to move into this home full time and find work there, or sell this home and buy a home,
or rent something for a period of time.
Yeah,
I'd like to see this. I'd like to see you get this house paid off by the time you hit retirement.
Yeah, and what other assets do you have, John? Do you have money in an IRA or bank accounts or anything like that?
Just my regular 401k.
And how much money is in that?
Right now, it's approximately $200,000+.
And how old are you?
I'm 50. Will be 52.
And do you have kids at home?
No, they've already grown up and moved out.
And when you retire, will you receive a monthly pension?
Yes.
And how much will you receive in a monthly pension?
I haven't even figured that out yet.
So here's my at $75,000 a year, you're going to have a hard time swinging
two homes.
And your wife's income went away, and that was you said $35,000, and it was at $110,000. That's borderline. That is borderline. So either it might be, you know what I'd like, Scott, you suggested he rent this house out that he plans to move to full time and then take that
in. That's one option.
Yeah. In fact, that's actually probably a good one.
Or just renting something. Yeah, but they enjoy going there on the weekends. So the other thing is to rent an apartment or something where you live in during the week and then go here on the weekend. But buying another residence, and nobody knows what's going to happen with home prices over the next decade, too. So you could buy something today and it not be worth anything more or less, even when you go to sell it.
I like Scott's idea. I think that you should not buy another place, and either you rent the vacation home out and take that income and increase your contributions to your 401k and set yourself up for retirement, or keep that place and don't rent it out and rent something small in the city that you're living in, but you can't afford to own two homes.
I see.
At $75,000 a year. In saying all of that, you should refinance your mortgage. I would refinance it into nothing more than a 15-year fixed rate mortgage. In a perfect world, you want your mortgage to be paid off the same time you retire. So you're at 52. If you could afford a 10-year, the payments on a 10-year mortgage, then that is what I would do. But you might have a hard time swinging that. So get a 15-year fixed rate mortgage on that property, and do not buy another home. Would you pull $30,000 out for a car?
Yeah.
I don't,
we're just not big fans of raiding home equity. For
something that's gonna wear itself out. Actually, it doesn't wear itself out. You wear it out, but I wouldn't do it.
I wouldn't recommend it either.
I would not.
So I know this isn't the answers you wanted to hear, but from our financial plan perspectives, I would not take the additional cash out for a car, and I would not recommend buying a second house if you're going to occupy both of these. So. But it does make tremendous sense to refinance right now because rates are low. So I'd definitely encourage.
And I would do a 15-year fixed rate mortgage. And how often do you go to this house on the weekends, John?
Every other weekend.
Yeah, every other weekend, roughly.
Yeah, and it might make sense for you to keep doing that. I mean, if it's part of your lifestyle, but we want to make sure that you can get to a point sometime where retirement's a reality for you. Whether or not you have some dream of retirement, maybe you want to keep working till the day you die, which is fine, but oftentimes people are forced into retirement through health issues or downsizing or whatnot. So that's, we think it's important for people to be retirement ready.
And what we do with our clients is walk them through the 7 personal decision points to make sure that they're ready for retirement. So you're worried about what your life is going to look like next year. We're worried about what your life looks like when you're 70 and 75 and 80. And that's actually, if you go to our website, moneymatters.com.
In the decade of the 50s, this is the decade that is going to make or break it for you.
This is where you're
going
to. The
planning you do in your 50s.
This is where you're going to accumulate that wealth and get rid of that debt that allows you to retire comfortably. So if you go to my website, moneymatters.com, and look, download the 7 personal decisions. The 7 personal decision points. And it's the questions we ask everyone that's preparing for retirement to make sure that they're ready for it. So go to moneymatters.com, just put in your email, and we'll send you over the 7 personal decision points. So appreciate the call.
Glad you called. And you know, Pat, it's really clearly the thing that we're most concerned about is not what's going to happen the next few years or making cash flow work out.
Correct.
Right, because the easiest thing to do, easiest way to buy a car is to take money out and pay for it over, finance it over 30 years, which is what you're doing. You take money out of a house to pay for a car, you are now buying that car over the next 30 years.
And the car's not going to last you 30 years.
No, 5 or 8 years down the road, you need a new car, and you still owe the vast majority of that amount, you still owe it on the house.
Yes.
That's just kind of how the... how the numbers work.
So it's hard because you've got needs that you want, I encourage everyone to go to the website and download the 7 personal decision points, and it will actually, if nothing else, will put you on the right track. The questions that you need to ask either your advisor, us, or yourself, are these the things I'm doing? If I answer all 7 of these, it will show you gaps in your retirement planning and things you need to work on in order to get there.
And it's not, we're not necessarily big proponents of retire as soon as you can. And
for many people, it's terrible for them to retire. Some people should never retire.
But it's so important to plan for it because you never know what tomorrow brings. And the fact is, we have seen firsthand a lot of situations where people are forced into retirement either because they lose their job, company moves, closes, whatever, or there's a health issue, either their own health,
their spouse,
or a spouse health,
child,
parent, whatever, and they don't have the financial resources. And it's easier for us to tell someone in their 50s, you probably can't afford that second home, than it is for us to tell someone in their 60s or 70s that you can't afford the current home you're in.
That's correct.
And we've had those conversations with people.
And in fact, there was a recent study by Aegon that cited somewhere close to 40% of people that retire.
Aegon?
Aegon?
Aegon Face? Aegon.
A-E-G-O-N.
Oh, Aegon. What a strange name. Aegon.
Yeah. Aegon. 40%.
I'm just sorry.
Close to 40% of people that retire involuntarily.
I think Social Security had their study showed it was higher than that.
Mm.
It was the majority.
Who can believe? Egg on or Social Security?
Probably discount them both a little because
yes.
They're just studied. I mean, it doesn't.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But the point is well taken.
Yeah. Cheryl sent us an email here. My dad turned 70 and a half this year, is looking at taking out a required minimum distribution from his traditional IRA and his 401k. He's still working full time. Here we go. Still working. Say 70. As CEO of a company, which he's a part owner, does he still need to take his required minimum distributions from both accounts, even though he's still working? If you are 70 and a half or older and you're still working, you don't have to take a required minimum distribution from that employer's retirement account.
Unless you own 5% or more of the company.
Then you have to.
And he's the CEO. Now, I say that with the greatest confidence in the world. But before I actually did it, I would go back and check the stats again because they change so regularly on the required minimum distributions, and we don't see many people that are age 70 and a half
still
that
employed.
Own more than 5% of the company that they're employed at.
That's true.
So, but off the top of my head, the last time I read the statutes, that was the answer.
But if you plan on working past age 70 or you are 70 or older and still working, you don't have to take a distribution from that employer's 401k until you're age 75. So you don't have to at age 7.5. But any monies that are outside of that, a 401k from a previous employer, an IRA, et cetera, then you're stuck taking required minimum distributions. Unless, of course, you took those old accounts, transferred them into your new employer's 401k.
Which is allowed.
Then you don't have any other 401k accounts or have any IRA accounts. You just have that one 401k account, and you can defer that.
And until... so Cheryl is her name.
But here's what,
she's asking
here's
the questions
what
about her dad. I would actually then, I would check to see if your father owned more than 5% of the company. And I would check the RMD.
But I've also run into situations that I've encouraged people to take distributions who are still working in their 70s because the required minimum distribution is going to be so onerous once they retire. Look, the longer you let them go, the worse it's going to be. So if you didn't have to take a required minimum distribution until you're age 90 and you made it to age 90, your distributions would be huge, which would have an adverse tax impact.
Assuming that there was a large account balance.
Well, that's fair enough. The implications could be huge.
Yes.
Or they could not be dependent on the account balance.
Yeah.
Is that better for you?
Yes.
You happy now?
I feel much better now.
All right,
thank you.
All right. We're going to take a quick break for the bottom of the hour news. When we come back, we will continue with calls. 921-1530. Again, 921-1530. You're listening to Hanson McClain's Money Matters.
Scott Hanson and Pat McClain have been airing Hanson McClain's Money Matters for nearly 20 years. The straightforward, common sense advice you hear each weekend is the same sort of advice you'll receive when you work with their advisory firm, Hanson McClain. Hanson McClain Advisors is a distinctive investment advisory firm in that it specializes with people preparing for and transitioning into retirement. The current economic environment has made it more difficult for many people to become retirement ready. Furthermore, with people living healthier, longer lives today, many folks view retirement much differently than their parents did. They want to stay active and engaged, and some don't want to ever fully retire. Hanson McClain understands that every individual is unique, and that is why they tailor their financial advice to the specific needs of each client they serve. Hanson McClain's credentialed advisors take the time to listen to their clients before they make any recommendations. And Hanson McClain's independent fiduciary model can give you confidence knowing your retirement dollars are invested properly for you. To get your retirement on track, contact them today by calling 1-888-2-HANSON or visiting their website at HansonMcClain.com. That's Hanson McClain.
Welcome back to Hanson McClain's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McClain. Thanks for joining us.
That's right. Glad you are still here with us. At least we assume you are. Or if you're just joining us, great. Scott Hanson and Pat McClain. Talking about the world, a fun world and of finance.
Answering your questions. If you'd like to email us a question, go to questions@moneymatters.com, questions@moneymatters.com. You can go to our website, moneymatters.com, and you can contact us via that and send us a message and something we can answer on the air. Or you can call us at 916-921-1530, 916-921-1530.
And let's talk with Ann. Ann, you're with Hanson McClain.
Hello.
Hi, Ann.
How are you?
I'm fine.
What can we do for you?
Well, I sent in an email. I don't know if you read it or not personally, but just to recap what my email said.
Alrighty.
I don't want to cry. We have a family home. It's a beach home that overlooks the whole Monterey Bay.
Oh, beautiful.
And we've had it for 45 years.
Mm-hmm.
Our parents are deceased. It's inherited now with four sisters.
Okay.
Now, it's a pretty much divisive situation.
Oh,
two sisters want to keep it. Two sisters want it sold.
Yep.
The one sister that was partnered with me, we want to keep it.
Mm-hmm.
I lost that sister last year.
Oh, sorry.
Got it. And what happened to her share in that?
That went to her two children.
Got it.
So anyway, and those two children are in the same point as me. They want to keep it.
They want to keep it. Okay, so.
So we now have the other two sisters that want out.
So 50% of the people want to keep, of the property owners want to keep it, and 50%
correct.
Of the property owners want to sell it.
Correct.
What is the value of the home?
Recent comps, they just hired a real estate agent. Recent comps with a condo that's just below ours sold at $891.
Okay.
So they're putting our property on the market at $969.
Wow. Okay. And what's your question for us?
Our question, I guess to boil it down, I have been through, I've been to two different lenders trying to see if I could somehow finagle buying mm-hmm. them out. I'm a single lady.
Mm-hmm.
I earn $90,000 a year, looking at retirement in 2 years.
Okay.
I knew just doing the money and the figures, I cannot buy them out. It just doesn't make sense. It mm-hmm. would put me in too much of a hardship in retirement. So I think what...
When you say... One second. So when you say buy them out, uh-huh. that your sister that passed away, her children, do they have the money that they could continue to make payments? So let's say you took out a mortgage on this house of $450,000.
How old are you, Ann?
I'm 64.
Okay.
And let's say you took out a mortgage on this house of $450,000.
That's exactly what I was. I got a quote for. Yeah.
Hypothetically, would the your nieces or nephews, the two of them, would they be able to actually make payments on the property?
Not really.
Okay.
They're all young. You know, just starting their lives out. You know, mm-hmm. they're getting going with their occupations and lives.
So the payments on the property, including taxes, insurance, if you took a $450,000 loan out...
It would have to be paid for by renting it.
And the tune of about...
Yeah.
Well, you need more than $450,000 if you were the sole owner.
Let me...
Yes. Well, I was going to try to just do the two sisters.
Okay.
Got a quote through a lender at 4.35.
Yeah, it's not... And how much other money do you have? Do you own a home?
I own my home at Lake of the Pines.
Okay.
I have a 230 mortgage on it. Right now, it would value at about 375.
Mm-hmm.
I had thought of selling this home to mm-hmm. try to, but it's, I don't have enough equity in this home.
What do you think you should do, Ann?
My gut feeling is telling me to go ahead and sell.
Yep.
My heart is telling me not to.
There's memories there, which is, you know, you want to hang on to. But the cost of that is security and retirement.
That's exactly, I can understand that, yes.
And that is, so just be thankful for the memories you had, that your parents actually gave that to you, that you had great times with your sisters. You don't want... this legacy, this beautiful legacy that your parents left you, either mm-hmm. to divide the family or to ruin your retirement based on what you believe is a dream that will continue forward. It's not worth it. It is absolutely not worth it. You guys, before you list it, you should go down there and have a great party. Enjoy it one last time. Take long walks on the beach. You know, have a good tear or two with your sisters and a bottle of wine. And thank mom and dad for what they gave you and move on.
Can I ask one more question?
Yeah.
Being financial advisors, do you ever have a list of people that are investors that may want to invest into a property?
Yeah, but what happens is that they're bottom fishers, basically. There's tons of investors. You don't have any problem finding investors in properties,
uh-huh.
but that's not normally...
Making the payment.
Yeah, no one wants a partner that they don't know. And investors, like if I gave you people that invested in properties, you're not mm-hmm. going to get as much value out of it as you would list it in the open market.
Okay.
That's just the reality of it. You want to list this thing in the open market.
Yes, that's true.
So we appreciate the sentiment that you're putting mm-hmm. in this, and you want it so badly to work, but your intelligence says this could mess up everything you've planned for. In retirement. All righty?
I understand that. Well, thank you.
All right. And Lake of the Pines is not bad. Monterey's
I know,
beautiful.
But it's not the same thing.
You shouldn't complain about Lake of the Pines.
That's beautiful up there.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
I love my home up here.
Yeah, so, yeah. So listen, you know, everything's relative, isn't it?
Okay.
All right. Appreciate the call.
Well, I listen to you guys weekends, and thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for calling.
For listening.
Yeah.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You know, this is not that uncommon, this sort of thing happens.
Very.
Right? Particularly, it's in a desirable place. Some of the siblings want to keep it. So if you own a property that you currently enjoy now for a family vacation home, maybe you have a house up in Tahoe or something that...
Monterey Bay.
Whatever. Or... Right. If you just have it, if you tell your kids, hey, I want to make sure you guys keep this house because it means a lot to the family, and don't set up provisions for that, this is what's going to happen.
And when we say provisions, it's normally a funding source that keeps the property alive.
Two things. One is you can set up a separate trust to hold that property. Secondly, it's having extra cash set aside to make the payments on that and have stipulations in the trust that states when this property can or cannot be sold.
But in almost all circumstances, every time we have seen this, I can't think of a single time where it wasn't divisive in the family. Where
I remember there was a multi-million dollar lakefront house that they were trying to, some kids wanted to keep and others didn't. And you're thinking from and some of the siblings, they didn't have much income. It's like, this would make the proceeds from that would make a huge difference in their
life.
And
not only that, what happens if you're the kid that actually gets the job back in Boston and your three siblings are out in California? And the asset stays, you know, the asset doesn't move from Monterey to Boston. The people do.
You got Nantucket out there. You got your own.
Yeah, but the point being is, you know, and I've got four kids, right? And you want these legacies to continue. The question is, do my children want the legacy to continue? We'll have to wait and tell.
The way to structure that, so if you're sitting there, if you happen to be listening to this and thinking, I wonder if that would be my kids down the road, is to do some proper estate planning today.
Or require the property be sold at your death.
Which you could also state that as well.
Yeah.
And that's sometimes helpful.
Yeah. Or set up a trust that has a funding source that will pay the upkeep taxes and insurance on the property and hope that the kids use it equally.
It's still going to be somewhat divisive.
Most of the time,
thinking about some friends that had they had an interest in a place up in Tahoe, and
most of the time the property is better off sold.
They ended up having to sell their piece out to the other ones, and then they weren't invited up anymore, and it created it was like it. I remember hearing the whole story, thinking
over what
it was a
no, no, but they're fighting over your brother and sister who at one point in time loved each other dearly. Because of an asset that someone gave them that was supposed to improve their lives.
And it created this tremendous animosity. And that's unfortunately what we see happen sometimes. So, anyway. And it's pretty, vacation homes are a wonderful luxury if you can afford them. If you can't afford the vacation home, they are disastrous on your finances.
They are ball and chain.
Security.
They become cumbersome, and they will drag down your lifestyle, regardless of where it's located, if you can't afford it.
If you can't afford it. I mean, and we've certainly seen enough people that have vacation homes that end up being quite house poor with their vacation homes and oftentimes put their retirement in jeopardy because of their vacation home. Anyway, we're going to take a short break here. When we come back, we'll continue with calls, 916-921-1530. Again, 921-1530. We'll also answer a couple questions as well. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Scott Hanson and Pat McLean, hosts of Hanson McLean's Money Matters, started their investment advisory firm, Hanson McLean Advisors, some 20 years ago with the idea of providing honest, transparent financial advice. From humble beginning with a small staff, today, Hanson McLean is one of the largest independent advisory firms in the country with a team of advisors in offices in Sacramento, Roseville, and Folsom. The same type of straightforward financial advice that is provided during the show is what the clients of Hanson McLean Advisors receive on a regular basis. The approach of Hanson McLean is first to listen to you and then come up with a plan to provide a greater chance of success in achieving your financial goals. Hanson McLean Advisors is not simply a store that sells one type of product. No, Hanson McLean Advisors is an independent advisory firm that pick from a wide variety of financial products to best suit your needs. So if you have yet to see how the commission-free programs of Hanson McLean Advisors can benefit you, contact them today at 1-888-2-HANSON or visit them at HansonMcLean.com. That's HansonMcLean.com.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean. Yeah, Scott, over the break.
Yes, I got a little teary out of that last call. I don't know why.
I looked over, your eyes are all, I'm like, are you choking up?
You know why is because you could see your, I come from a family of five kids. You could see the division taking place in a family over an ass. You know, fortunately, we're not going to have to worry about that, my brothers and sisters, about the assets. But when she was asking the questions, I thought of three instances that I have worked with brothers and sisters that were in these types of squabbles over inherited assets. And it was terrible. You know, I helped them get through it, but if for many of them, you know, we divided the assets in an appropriate manner because I worked with mom and dad and many of the children. So there's not unusual for our firm to work with, you know, mom and dad and then work with the children. And then when mom and dad die is to help the money go forward. When she was asking the question, I thought of three instances where one of them, a great client of mine, he's been a client for over 20 years, he didn't talk to his sister for 3 or 4 years after it. So I did tear up a little bit. Not too bad. But it's good to know that I have emotions.
Yes, because I sometimes had no idea.
Anyway, right, isn't that kind of sad? She was so emotional about it. And it's just a house. Just a house.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons I got into this profession 25 years ago, why has it been 25 years, is it's not, the money's the part of it. The investing's part of it. I enjoy that part of it. I enjoy, personally, the human side of it. I enjoy the process that takes place with a family or an individual as they sort through these things, trying to figure out what it is they're trying to accomplish with their money, what are the values that they have, and try to help them accomplish what they want to accomplish with those finances.
Yes.
That's, to me, why. So things dealing with that, and it's oftentimes we have to tell people things that they don't want to hear. A good financial planner, if you have an advisor or a financial planner, somebody that doesn't...
That agrees with everything, yes, that you bring to them?
Then you probably don't have the
then right. Then you probably don't have the right.
If someone says, you know, I don't really think you should do this, or I don't think you should afford this, or I would recommend against that, then you might have the right kind of advisor.
That is correct.
So, all right, well, let's go back to the calls here. We're going to talk with Steve.
Hey, how's it going?
Hi, Steve. Welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you?
Excellent. Thanks for joining us.
Love your show, sir.
Hey, thank you.
So my question was about my tax return. I'm looking at about getting about $1,500, and I was wondering what's the best way to invest it. And, I mean, it could be something safe, and I'd also like to hear something that might be a little unsafe. I know that you're, you know, pretty good on giving all your listeners, you know, safe, stable strategies to grow their money, but I'd like to hear if there's something out there that's high risk, high reward.
What? How old are you, Steve?
I'm 30.
And what do you want this tax return, when do you want to spend the $1,500? Next year, 5 years out, retirement
20,
time?
20, 30, 40. What's your timeline for this investment?
Oh, I mean, as soon as I get it, I'd like to invest.
And how long would you want to keep it invested for? When do you hope to get the money back out of it? How much time do we have?
For retirement?
Yeah.
I mean, I would like to say it's probably for retirement.
All right.
It could also just be something where, you know, if it grows and we don't think it's going to go any higher, you might pull it out then.
Yeah, but you're 30 years of age. I would buy the total market index
in a
Roth IRA. I'd put 100% of it. I would lock those dollars up. They're going to go tax deferred. They're going to come out tax free, and you can keep them there until you're age 59 and a half. I'd put it in there, and I wouldn't worry about it. And the market will go up, and the market will go down, and the market will go up, and it will go down. But your timeline is 30 years. You're 30 years of age. And the total market is the U.S. market, most of the U.S. market stock. That's what I'd do with the money. If you were my what's that?
I was gonna say, as far as the stock market goes, if someone wanted to, let's just say, start like an E-Trade account or something of that nature, Would you suggest something like that?
You can buy the
so here's the, people talk about the stock market like it's some people use the market as a place to kind of gamble and trade and try to outsmart things, and they make maybe they'll set up an account at a discount brokerage firm and try to trade and day trade and all that other stuff. That's one strategy. That's if you want to speculate. I don't wouldn't recommend it. But if you look at instead of you if you view this as not some market where I'm going to go trade stuff, but instead I'm going to go and buy. I'm going to be an owner
of some of the best companies in America for the next 30 years by buying the total market. That's what you get.
As those companies grow in value, then you participate.
The amount for you to trade effectively as a day trader is what basically you're asking. You don't have either the skill, the time, nor the resources to do it.
Right.
If you put it, for most people who day trade, if they put that much energy into their primary careers, they would be so much better off. So I think you should buy the S&P 5 or the total market. You can get it almost anywhere. It's a low cost index. Do it inside a Roth IRA. Call it a day. You could buy it at any discount broker. Anyone.
Very nice.
Easy enough. All right. Appreciate the call.
Yeah.
Thank you guys.
Surely.
I'm glad you're looking at saving these dollars and not blowing the dollars because
that's easy to do.
Yeah, and people have higher and higher tax returns these days than before because of all the tax credits that get transfers.
Point. So if, in fact, you get a large tax refund this next year or you have to pay a lot, you should probably adjust your holdings on whatever your Social Security or your paycheck. Scott, we had a question about tithing. Do you have that?
Yes. Here's why I'm hesitant about it.
Why?
I think it's becoming quite theological. But I'm going to...
Let's take a stab at it.
All right. Because I like the question, and I would like to have the conversation with her directly and kind of... So,
but my, we can share our thoughts.
My husband... And, this is from Lori. My husband and I are both born-again Christians, though imperfect like everyone, and we believe in tithing on all of our income. The Lord has blessed us. For his promise of good measure, pressed, shaken down, running over. And we praise him for his bountiful blessing to us in so many ways. That sounds like a prayer. The bountiful blessings.
Actually, I'm going to keep that.
Huh?
We'll keep that as a prayer.
We both lost our living parents in the last few months. Oh, that's terrible. We're both inheriting valuable real estate. The question is, do we tithe on the appraised value of the real estate with cash on hand? What if our cash on hand doesn't cover the tithe for the real estate?
That is a, a deeply Christian and committed tither. Someone who tithes.
And it becomes theological.
At that point in time.
And you asked me to take a whack at it.
So.
We normally don't get in this kind of, so. The tithe comes from the Old Testament times and from the Israelites, where they're asked to give 10% of the first fruits to go to a tithe. It originally went to the Levites, the priests back in the days. And with Jesus continued that same preaching of, but he actually took it a step further, really, that it's really all God's. And if you think about the story of the widow who put the two small coins into the treasury, and Jesus said she's given much more than anybody else because she gave all she had. And I think, so here's what happens sometimes when people say, I'm taking my faith serious. This is what this is about. I'm taking my faith seriously, and I want to do the right thing with my assets in line with my faith. That's what Lori's attempting to do here, right?
Yes, but she's afraid she doesn't have enough cash on hand to fulfill that, if in fact she were to tithe on the inherited assets.
That's correct. So maybe, in line with her faith, maybe she says, well, what is the purpose of the real estate that I'm inheriting? And am I inheriting this real estate to have further blessings in my life, or could one of these properties be used for blessing in something else, and maybe consider selling one of the properties or gifting a portion of one of those properties or something creative along those lines. So she's asking my opinion, and I've actually spoken quite a bit on, and I've done a lot of research on this sort of stuff. I think it's not a question of how do I extract that 10% out of there? It's more of a question of, given my faith and what my my view is on with my assets, what am I to do with these monies that I inherit? Are they to go all to me and stay with me, and then I die and they get transferred to my kids, and then they die and it gets transferred to their kids? Or is there some other, something else that can be done with this today?
Or you would look at it and say, at some point in time, 10% of the assets will be given away. So if it's a rental income, then 10% of that will be given away. And when those assets,
10% of the rent.
And when those assets are turned to cash at some point in time, then 10% would be given as a tithe.
But when you get to the point, when you have more than you need, maybe it's more than the tithe.
Oh, that's a good point.
So,
well, I appreciate that, Scott.
That's why you asked me to tackle. It's not an easy one to tackle.
But you're much more versed at this than I am. I mean, you've spoken on tithing and the use of your resources and giving.
And there's a lot of talk that
all over the country, as a matter of fact.
All over the I've spoken in places around the world actually
on this. Yeah, and we don't use. In fact, I think this is the first time this has ever come up in our 20 years of actually doing the radio show.
What, the question like this?
Yes,
I've never had a question like this. It's an interesting one to kind of take on here today. Because this isn't a religious program.
Yeah, there are some financial advisory religious programs, but this is not one of them.
Yes, and we could certainly spend more time than the 3 minutes we just had on this.
On tithing?
This subject here. But I actually, I believe regardless of someone's faith or lack thereof or whatever, I think there's a healthy discipline behind giving and one's finances. Because when we give, our focus gets off ourselves and gets on to those that are less fortunate, that have greater needs than ourselves. And I believe it can help us make better choices with our own finances, because we end up getting into trouble because we spend more than we can afford to try to meet some sort of need that we think we have.
But it is a difficult concept, Scott. I mean, it is a absolutely difficult concept to give.
It's against our nature. It's against human nature.
You're much better at it than I am.
Well, I think we all give in different ways anyway. And you're a very generous person, so I wouldn't discount it. Anyway, we are out of time. We are here every Saturday from 10 to 11. You can catch me at church on I'll be preaching tomorrow on
on tithing.
We rebroadcast Sundays 2 to 3. Learn more at moneymatters.com. Enjoy the rest of your week. This has been Hanson McClain.